This is where you demonstrate to the other person that you were genuinely paying attention. It is only when you can repeat back what the other person has just said in your own words that you prove to him or her that you were really listening. Most problems in relationships arise because of poor communication. The couple does not talk together often enough, or one or the other does not listen attentively when the other wants to speak. Each person has an emotional need to talk a certain amount with his or her spouse. Each person also has an emotional need to listen a certain amount. The most compatible couples are those in whom the desire to talk and listen are in balance with each other. There is an easy ebb and flow of conversation, punctuated with comfortable silences. Each person gets a chance to fulfill his or her need for both talking and listening, and both parties are content. Total commitment is essential. Love and marriage require total commitment on the part of both people. It takes tremendous discipline to go all in a relationship. What's more, this is also tremendously liberating. It is only when you are totally committed to a relationship with a single person that you are completely free to turn your attention toward fulfilling your potential in the other aspects of your life. One of the most important disciplines in a marriage or relationship is that of faithfulness. Because we live in a highly sexualized society, there are temptations and provocations around us all the time and virtually everywhere we go. It often takes considerable self-discipline and self-control to be completely loyal to your spouse throughout your married life. There are two ways to help you avoid the regular temptations that can damage or even destroy the most loving of relationships. First, make a decision in advance that you will never, never be unfaithful to your spouse. Like drawing a line in the sand, make the decision in advance that no matter what happens, you will not stray for any reason. Second, discipline yourself to stay out of harm's way. Refuse to go anywhere or do anything where temptation may exist. Except when essential for business purposes, avoid having lunch, drinks, or dinner alone with a member of the opposite sex. Remember, there is safety in crowds. Continually imagine, everywhere you go and in everything you do, that your spouse is standing right next to you, watching and listening to what you say and do. Imagine that anything and everything you do, no matter where you are, is going to be reported back to your spouse within 24 hours. Use your discipline and willpower to build and maintain a reputation for being a completely honest and faithful spouse. Be willing to change. Every marriage is a work in progress. As time passes, the nature of your marriage will change, usually in positive and constructive ways. To keep your relationship happy, harmonious, and growing, you must be willing to change in response to changing circumstances, especially having children and watching them grow up. You need to be prepared to change with age, new jobs and careers, physical moves from one part of the country to another, changes in financial circumstances, and changes in health. Flexibility is absolutely essential to a long, happy marriage. There are only four ways that you can change your life. First, you can do more of some things. Second, you can do less of other things. Third, you can start something that you have never done before. And fourth, you can stop doing certain things altogether. Whenever you are experiencing resistance or frustration, or you are confronted with the need for change, ask yourself, is there anything that I need to do more of, less of, start, or stop doing? The four questions you should ask. On a regular basis, you should sit down with your spouse and later with your children and have the courage to ask them these four questions. 1. Is there anything that I'm doing that you would like me to do more of? 2. Is there anything that I am doing that you would like me to do less of? 3. Is there anything that you would like me to start doing that I am not doing today? And 4. Is there anything that I am doing that you would like me to stop doing altogether? When you have the courage and discipline to ask these questions of your spouse and your children on a regular basis, you'll be amazed at the quality and depth of the answers you receive. You will get continual guidance on how you can modify and adjust your behaviors to maintain higher levels of harmony happiness, and love with your spouse and the other members of your family. Your spouse should be your best friend. Love and marriage are perhaps the most important elements of a happy, fulfilling life. They require a lifelong exercise of self-discipline and willpower to create and maintain harmony. They require that you be open, honest, and candid at all times. Most of all, a happy, loving marriage requires that you see your spouse as your best friend. There should be no one in the world who you would rather spend time with more than him or her. There should be no one with whom you are more open and honest than with him or her. When you see your spouse as your best friend and treat him or her as such, you can create a loving relationship that lasts all the days of your lives. As Emmett Fox, a spiritual writer and teacher, once wrote, "Love is by far the most important thing of all. It casts out fear. It is the fulfilling of the law. It covers a multitude of sins. Love is absolutely invincible. There is no difficulty that enough love will not cure, no disease that enough love will not heal, no door that enough love will not open, no gulf that enough love will not bridge, no wall that enough love will not throw down, and no sin that enough love will not redeem." It makes no difference how deeply seated may be the trouble, how hopeless the outlook, how muddled the tangle, how great the mistake, a sufficient realization of love will dissolve it all. If only you could love enough, you would be the happiest and most powerful being in the world. In the next chapter, you will learn specifically why self-discipline is so important when raising happy, healthy, and self-confident children. Now, here are 7 action exercises. 1. What is the most important single action you could take right now to increase the love and harmony in your marriage or relationship? 2. What disciplines or practices could you develop that would improve the quality of your marriage for the other person? 3. Identify one behavior you could engage in that would improve your communications in your marriage. 4. Sit down with your spouse and ask him or her for ideas on things that you should do more of, less of, start, or stop doing. 5. Identify the 2 qualities that you most admire in your partner. 6. Identify the areas in which you and your partner are the most compatible. And 7. Identify the most important values that you and your partner share. Chapter 19, Self-Discipline and Children. Bertrand Russell wrote, "Right discipline exists not in external compulsion, but in habits of mind which lead spontaneously to desirable rather than undesirable activities." You can calculate the value or importance of something you do by measuring the possible consequences of doing it or not doing it. Something that is important is something that has significant potential consequences, like jumping out of the path of a speeding car. Bringing children into the world has consequences that can go on for 80 years, which is the average life expectancy of a person today and beyond, into the lives of your grandchildren and great-grandchildren. This is why becoming a parent is one of the most important things you will ever do. As an adult, you are still affected today by things that your grandparents did or didn't do to or for your parents. The way you treat your children is strongly influenced by the way your parents treated you. It has consequences that cascade down the generations, and it has an enormous influence on their lifelong happiness and well-being. Your greatest responsibility. When you have a child, a high level of self-discipline is essential in order to fulfill your commitment and deliver on your responsibility. The day your first child is born, you have taken on a minimum 20-year commitment to do everything possible to raise your child as a happy, healthy, and self-confident adult. At every stage of your child's life, your words, actions, non-actions, and behaviors are shaping and influencing that child and determining how he or she will turn out as an adult. The greatest need that a child has is for an unbroken flow of unconditional love and acceptance from his or her parents. Children need love almost as much as they need oxygen. The amount of love that a child receives, especially in his or her formative years, is the critical determinant of how healthy and happy he or she becomes as an adult. How children spell love. How does a child spell love? T-I-M-E. Children determine how valuable and important they are and develop their self-esteem and self-worth by measuring the amount of time that the most important people in their lives spend with them when they are young. There's no substitute for time, and once gone, you cannot make it up. Perhaps the greatest regret reported by parents is that I didn't spend enough time with my child when he or she was young. When you become a parent, you must discipline yourself and organize your life so that you can spend ample time with your child throughout his or her growing years. You must discipline yourself to cut back, reduce, downsize, and eliminate other activities that prevent you from being an excellent parent. A wake-up call. Some years ago, a good friend of mine got married. He was an avid golfer and he regularly played golf 5 times a week, often flying south in the winter for golf vacations when his local golf courses were covered with snow. Within 4 years of marrying, he and his wife had 4 children. Nonetheless, he still tried to play golf several times a week, taking time off from his business during the week and playing on weekends. Finally, his wife confronted him and told him that he was not spending enough time with his young children. His golf was taking up too many hours that would be better spent at home with her and with the children, especially during their most vulnerable and sensitive years. He suddenly realized that his life had changed. The things that he could do when he was single were no longer possible when he had young children. Being highly responsible and self-disciplined, he immediately cut back his golf to once per week and rechanneled his time and energy into his family. He told me later that it made an extraordinary difference to his marriage and to his relationships with his young children. Setting new priorities. When you get married, your life goes through a major shift. Your lifestyle changes, and many of your common activities lose their importance and urgency. When your first child is born, your life shifts again. It often feels as if the first stage of your life, your youth, has dropped off, like the first stage of a rocket, and you are now on a different trajectory in life. In fact, it's not uncommon for couples to change their lives completely when their first child is born. They cut back or discontinue many of their previous social activities. They stop dining and drinking with friends, and they stop going out socially on the weekends. They begin to build a different life together around their home and children. The children become the focus of their time and attention. The children become the primary subject of their conversations. Responsible parents approach child-rearing as the most important part of their lives. They plan and organize their time and activities so they can fulfill this responsibility at a high level. Long-term thinking. Children force you to think long-term. When you realize that everything that you do or fail to do with your children in their formative years will have a lasting impact for generations to come, you become far more thoughtful and sensitive to the things you say and the way you treat them. When you are young and single, you can let it all hang out. You can blow up, get angry, express your feelings freely, and be your own person. But when you have a child, you need to impose a higher level of discipline and self-control on yourself. Children are hypersensitive to the influence of their parents during their formative years. They see and experience each word and reaction of their parents, and they incorporate those words and actions into their worldview and self-image. In almost every case, when you see a dysfunctional adult, you can trace it back to dysfunctional parenting. When that dysfunctional adult was a child, their parents did or said things to them that hurt them, confused them, scared them, and created within them feelings of insecurity, anger, and inferiority. The greatest gift is love. The greatest gift you can give children is to let them know that you love them 100% of the time and that your love for them never changes, no matter what happens. There is no greater blessing for children than to know with complete confidence that the most important people in their life, their parents, love them completely and accept them totally, no matter what they do or what mistakes they make. Children are not little adults. They do not have the ability to make good judgments about the right or wrong things to do. It takes them many years of trial and error and sometimes bitter experience to develop the wisdom and judgment that enables them to make good decisions for themselves and their futures. The kindest way to treat your children when they make mistakes is to behave with calmness and compassion and to help them learn the lessons contained in the problem or difficulty. Discipline versus development. Many parents think that their job is to discipline their children by punishing them when they make a mistake. Back in the 1930s, when my parents were growing up, it was generally taught that the job of the parent was to break the will of the child. This philosophy led to a generation of broken children, whose parents felt that it was their duty to mold them and shape them into little people that their parents found to be acceptable. But the fact is that each child is unique and different from all other people in the world. Each child comes into this world with his or her unique temperament, personality, and natural leanings toward different interests and activities. Parents are often amazed to see that each of their children is very different from each other child, even though they come from the same parents and grow up in the same household. In my experience, each child marches to the beat of a different drummer. No matter what you do to or for them, they have their own special destiny. They're going to grow up with a particular personality, and they'll be attracted to particular people and activities. Your main job is to create an environment in which they feel safe and confident enough to follow their inner promptings and personal inclinations. Question your beliefs. A philosopher once said, "Before I had children, I had four philosophies about raising children. Now I have four children and no philosophies." Each child is different from any other child and from any other person. When raising your children, be prepared to question your most cherished beliefs about what they should or should not do, say, or be. Above all, be prepared to admit that you could be wrong, because you are going to make more mistakes than you can possibly imagine. Perhaps the most important responsibility you have as a parent is to instill values in your children, especially the value of self-discipline. One of the most common desires that parents have for their children is to raise them with a sense of self-responsibility and self-control. Parents want their children to be self-disciplined and to practice self-mastery and self-denial, or the ability to delay gratification. Set a good example. Albert Schweitzer once wrote that, "You must teach men at the school of example, for they will learn at no other." The most powerful influence you have on your children is the example that you set for them all the time they are growing up. Your children are always watching you out of the corners of their eyes or from another room. They take everything in. They measure and analyze your behaviors, especially when you are under stress. By watching the way you behave, especially when you're angry or upset or when they have made a mistake, they develop a clear picture for themselves of how adults are supposed to behave in the world. Your example sets the standard that they consider to be the normal way that adults act in various circumstances, especially when under stress. Your children, if they admire and respect your example, will strive to emulate you while they are growing up, and then continuing on for the rest of their lives. Perhaps the best question you can ask yourself over and over is, "What kind of a family would my family be if everyone in it were just like me?" Be a role model. When you practice self-discipline and self-control, especially when you feel angry or upset, your children absorb the lesson. Later, when they are angry or upset, they will practice self-discipline and self-control as well. In a recent study, researchers concluded that children form their idea of the world by watching how their mother deals with the ups and downs of daily life. If their mother seems calm, relaxed, and in control, children assume that this is a logical and rational world, so they are much more likely to practice calmness and self-control themselves. If their mother seems to be frustrated, angry, or overwhelmed by too much to do and too little time, children absorb the worldview that life is confused and stressful. Building character. The most important job you have as a parent is to instill values and to build character in your children. You do this by teaching them what values are important, especially those of integrity and truth-telling. You set yourself up as a role model and demonstrate the values you want your children to have in every situation where those values are called for. Because the core value of character is integrity, the most important value that you instill in your children is truthfulness. Much to the shock of most parents, children lie. When they are growing up, they don't tell the truth. They tell both little and big lies. Often this comes as a surprise to parents who feel that somehow they must have failed their children in some way. But don't worry. Lying is a normal and natural part of childhood. It's a form of communication that children are trying out on you to see if it works. If children find that telling lies is an effective way to get the things they want quickly and easily, they will lie on a regular basis. For example, I once asked my son Michael a question, and he gave me an answer that I knew was completely untrue. I asked him, "Michael, why did you say that? You know that's a barefaced lie." Michael, who was 10 years old at the time, answered candidly, "Well, I just thought I'd give it a try." Children will give lying a try to see if it works. If it doesn't, they'll try something else, and that something else is usually telling the truth. Always tell the truth. One day, my wife and I read a question in a book on child raising, in which it said that, if your children lie to you, who has made them afraid to tell the truth? That was a real eye-opener for us. We immediately sat down with our children and told them, from now on, always tell the truth. We promise you that you will never get into trouble for telling the truth. If you tell a lie, we will be upset and you'll be punished. But if you tell the truth, you'll always be okay with us. From that day onward, with few exceptions, our children tried us out with the truth. Over time, they got into a habit of telling the truth, no matter what it was. And we kept our promise. We never punished our children for telling the truth. One day as we were sitting around the family dinner table, one of our children was talking about his friend who had told him to lie to us about something he was planning to do. My son said, "I told him that I never lie to my parents." His friend said, "Everyone lies to their parents." My son repeated, "I never lie to my parents because I don't have to. I can always tell them the truth and everything will be okay." Our three children listened to this and they all agreed. They told us that this was a great family because they never had to lie to their parents. The foundation of self-confidence. When children tell the truth, they grow up straight and strong with high self-esteem and high levels of self-confidence. They have higher levels of self-respect and personal pride. They look you straight in the eye and tell you exactly what they are thinking and feeling. They're very different from children who must continually lie or shade the truth in order to get things past their parents. In raising your children, there will be countless times when they will do or say something of which you disapprove or which makes you angry. During these times, you must discipline yourself to think before you act or react, controlling yourself and your temper. You must remind yourself that what you do in a moment of stress is registered and recorded by your child and can have an effect on him or her for an indefinite period into the future. Children learn values by teaching and example, given to them repeatedly while they're growing up. When you teach them values and personally practice the values of love, especially for your spouse, compassion for those who are less fortunate, generosity with those who need it, patience when it is required, tolerance for different viewpoints, courage in the face of difficulties, and perseverance in the face of setbacks, your children will adopt these behaviors as norms. They will see them as the appropriate way to respond to these kinds of situations as they grow up. The power of forgiveness. One of the most important of all values that you teach your children is forgiveness. The inability to forgive lies at the root of most negative emotions. When you practice forgiveness, when you freely let things go, your children grow up with the ability to forgive as well. This saves them from years of unhappiness as a result of someone hurting them in some way, which will always happen. My parents were adamant and inflexible. They had low self-esteem as a result of difficult depression-era childhoods. As a result, once they had taken a position on any subject, however wrong, they could never back down and admit that they were wrong. I resolved that when I had children, I would do exactly the opposite. From the time my daughter, Christina, was a little girl, if I shouted at her for any reason, I would always go to her and apologize. I would say, "I should not have shouted at you. I was wrong. Will you forgive me?" When you raise children, they will make countless mistakes while they are growing up. Sometimes you will overreact. Unless you are a saint, this is almost impossible for you not to do. However, whenever you make a mistake with your child, you should have the courage and compassion to realize that destructive criticism from a parent is extremely painful to a child. Go and take it back. Apologize and ask your child for forgiveness. Even if the child has misbehaved, this does not justify reacting in a negative and hurtful way towards your child. Just say, "I apologize. Will you forgive me?" And they always will. The minute you apologize and ask your children to forgive you for anything that you may have done to hurt them, you liberate them from feelings of negativity or inferiority. By taking it back, you allow them to be happy and confident once more. Teaching your children is never-ending. Developing proper values and teaching proper conduct to your children is a lifelong job. You cannot give a single lecture on truthfulness and compassion and then forget about it. You must repeat the lesson by discussion and example over and over, year after year, all the time while your children are with you. In a letter to Miss Manners, a parent asked, "How long does it take to teach my children table manners? No matter what I say, it seems that my children still eat in an unmannered and disorganized way." Miss Manners responded by saying, "Be patient. It takes about 15 years of continual repetition to teach your children table manners. And even then, there are no guarantees that your instruction will be successful." Be their role model. Of course, if you want your children to behave in a certain way, you must model that method of behavior continually, year after year. If you want your children to dress properly, you must dress properly. If you want your children to groom themselves properly, you must groom yourself properly as well. If you want your children to be organized and efficient, you must show them the way by being organized and efficient yourself. Remember each day that your children are going to behave the way that you behave for the rest of their lives. When you think like this, it forces you to practice higher levels of self-discipline and self-control, knowing that the consequences of your behaviors are going to affect your children's chances in life many years from now. The discipline of raising children so that they grow up with high self-esteem, being positive and confident in themselves and their own value, is one of the most important things you ever do. The results of your child-rearing will last you all the years of your life. Now, here are 7 action exercises. 1. What 2 qualities would you like your children to identify with you by observing your behavior? 2. What 2 qualities would you like most to instill in your children, and how could you achieve this? 3. If you were an excellent role model for your children, how would your behaviors be different starting today? 4. What mistakes have your children made that you should forgive and forget about starting immediately? 5. What actions are you going to take immediately to spend more time with your children? 6. What actions should you take to instill the quality of truthfulness in your children? And 7. How could you encourage and reward your children so that they practice greater self-discipline, self-control, and self-mastery? Chapter 20. Self-Discipline and Friendship. Everything you want in life has a price connected to it. There's a price to pay if you want to make things better, a price to pay for leaving things as they are, a price for everything. Harry Brown. Fully 85% of your happiness will come from happy relationships with other people. Unfortunately, fully 85% of your problems and unhappiness will be associated with other people as well. Chapters 18 and 19 offered some ideas on how to have a happier marriage and raise happier children. But in addition to your family, of course, your friendships are also important to your well-being. It therefore behooves you to become absolutely excellent at human relations. Fortunately, this is a learnable skill. You can become one of the most popular people in your work and social circle by simply engaging in the behaviors that other popular people practice on a regular basis. Aristotle wrote that man is a social animal. This means that we define ourselves in terms of our relationships with other people. Our destinies are determined by our interactions with others and theirs with us. We only learn who we are and know about ourselves through interacting with other people. The core of personality. Psychologists tell us that everything we do is either to build our self-esteem or to protect it from being torn down by other people. Each person is hypersensitive about their own sense of personal value and importance. Your self-esteem, how you feel about yourself, how much you like yourself, is largely determined by your self-image, or the way you see and think about yourself. Your self-image is made up of three parts, like the three wedges of a pie, each touching the others. First, your self-image is made up of the way you see yourself. This largely determines the way you walk, talk, behave, and interact with others. The second part of your self-image is the way you think others see you. If you think other people like, respect, and admire you, you see yourself in a positive way, and you enjoy higher feelings of self-esteem and self-importance. The third part of your self-image is the way people actually do see you and treat you. If you think you are well-liked and popular, and someone treats you in a rude or disrespectful way, it can be a shock to your self-image and lower your self-esteem. On the other hand, if you see yourself as an average person, and the people you meet treat you as though you are a valuable and important person, you can experience a positive shock to your self-image that causes you to like and value yourself even more. The key to happiness. You are only truly happy when you feel that all three parts of your self-image coincide. You're happy only when you feel that the way you see yourself, the way you think others see you, and the way they actually see you all seem to be consistent in a particular situation. In life, you seek out friendships and relationships with people who make you feel comfortable with the way you see yourself and think about yourself. When you are with people who treat you as if you are valuable and important, you enjoy higher levels of self-esteem. You like and respect yourself more. You feel happy in their presence. For example, in school, you always did better and got better grades when you felt that the teacher liked you and cared about you. At work, perhaps the greatest motivator is an attitude of consideration on the part of the boss toward the employee. Whenever an employee feels that the boss cares about him as a person, rather than just as an employee, he feels more valuable and performs his job better. The law of indirect effort. The secret to building and maintaining wonderful friendships and relationships is simple. It is for you to practice the law of indirect effort in every interaction with other people. You must get out of yourself and your own preoccupations in order to get into other people and how they might be thinking and feeling. Therefore, if you want to have a friend, you must first be a friend. If you want people to like you, you must first like them. If you want people to respect you, you should first respect them. If you want to impress others, you should first be impressed by them. In this way, by approaching people indirectly, you appeal to their deepest subconscious needs. Raise other people's self-esteem. The deepest subconscious need that people have is the need to feel important. Since you have this need as well, whenever you practice the law of indirect effort and focus on making other people feel important, you reinforce their self-image, increase their self-esteem, and make them feel happy about themselves and, by extension, about yourself. Whenever you say or do anything to raise the self-esteem of another person, you trigger a boomerang effect that causes your own self-esteem to go up at the same time and in the same measure. You can never do or say anything to make another person feel better about himself without simultaneously feeling better about yourself. It takes tremendous self-discipline and self-control for you to rise above yourself. Instead of trying to get other people to like you and be impressed by you, focus first on liking them and being impressed by them. 7 ways to make people feel important. The key to excellent relationships with others is quite simple. Make them feel important. To the degree to which you can make other people feel important, starting with the members of your family and then extending outward to your friends and coworkers, you will become one of the most popular people in your world. There are 7 ways to make other people feel important. These are simple practices that you can learn through repetition. Number one, accept people the way they are. One of the deepest cravings of human nature is to be accepted by other people without judgment, evaluation, or criticism. Psychologists call this behavior unconditional positive regard. This is when you accept the other person completely without reservation for exactly the way he or she is. Because most people are judgmental and critical, to be unconditionally accepted by another person raises that person's self-esteem, reinforces his or her self-image, and makes that person feel happy about him or herself. In the movie Bridget Jones' Diary, the entire focus was on the discovery by Bridget that she had found a man who likes me just the way I am. This was considered to be such an amazing thing to happen. All her friends were astonished that anyone could ever have a relationship based on unconditional acceptance by another person. When you look at other people and give them a genuine smile, they feel happier about themselves. Their self-esteem goes up. They feel more valuable and important. When you stop thinking about yourself and the impression you are making on others, and instead start thinking about others and the impression they are making on you, you can relax. You take a deep breath and just smile at people when you meet them and greet them, both at home and at work. It's one of the most powerful self-esteem and relationship-building behaviors you can do. Smiling at people makes them feel important and valuable. Number two, show your appreciation for others. Whenever you appreciate another person for anything that he or she has done or said, you raise that person's self-esteem and make him or her feel more important. Expressions of appreciation from small nods and smiles, all the way through to cards, letters, and gifts, raises people's self-esteem and causes them to like themselves more. As a result, by the law of indirect effort, they will like you more as well. The simplest way to express appreciation is to simply say thank you. The words thank you are deeply appreciated in any language, anywhere in the world. I have traveled in 90 countries, and the very first thing I learn is the words for please and thank you. Each time you use those words, people brighten up, smile, and feel happy to be in your presence. Every time you say thank you, it has an almost magical effect on the other person. It makes them feel important and far happier about being in your presence and helping you with anything you need. Number three, be agreeable. The most welcome people in every situation are those who are generally agreeable and positive with others. On the other hand, argumentative people who question, complain, and disagree are seldom welcome anywhere. When you nod, smile, and agree with another person when he or she is talking or expressing an opinion, you make that person feel intelligent, respected, valuable, and important. When you are agreeable with another person, even if they say something with which you may not be in complete accord, you make that person feel happy to be in your presence. In my work as a professional speaker, I meet thousands of people each year. They come up to me and often express opinions on subjects of which I am very well informed and they obviously are not. Sometimes they say ridiculous things that are either not true or that make no sense. In every case, however, I smile and agree, nodding and asking them questions and listening to them express their ideas and opinions. They go away feeling that they've had a good conversation with the speaker and that I probably agree with them. It costs me nothing and it makes them happy. It makes them feel important. Number four, show your admiration. People usually invest a lot of personal emotion in their possessions, traits, and accomplishments. When you admire something belonging to another person, it makes them feel happy about themselves. As Abraham Lincoln said, everybody likes a compliment. Express your admiration for a person's appearance and specific items of their clothing or dress. Men are especially complimented when you say something nice about their ties or their shoes. Women enjoy being complimented about their hair or any other item of their appearance. People spend a lot of time putting themselves together before they go out. You can also compliment a person's traits or characteristics, saying things such as, "You are certainly persistent." People invest their entire lives developing traits and qualities, especially positive qualities, and they feel flattered when you notice and compliment them on those qualities. Compliment a person's accomplishments. Tell people how much you admire their home or office or the business they have built or the position they've achieved in that business. Number 5, pay attention to others. Perhaps the most powerful way to raise a person's self-esteem is to listen to them attentively when they speak. In my book, The Power of Charm, my co-author Ron Arden and I explain how listening to a person while they talk on any subject in a way that is focused is perceived as charming behavior. The key to great listening is for you to ask questions and then hang on every word of the answers. When the person slows down or comes to the end of a statement, ask another question. Lean forward attentively. Listen without interrupting. Listen as though what the person is saying is the smartest and most interesting thing you've ever heard. When a person is attentively listened to, their brain releases endorphins. As a result, they feel happy about themselves. Their self-esteem goes up. What's more, they associate this happy feeling with being in your presence. From this, that person will like you more and find you to be a more interesting and intelligent person. Number 6. Never criticize, condemn, or complain about anything, whether it be directly or indirectly. Never do or say anything that lowers a person's self-esteem or makes them feel less important or valuable. Refuse to gossip or discuss other people in a negative way. Never say anything about a person that you would not say to their face. The most harmful force in all of human relationships is destructive criticism. It lowers a person's self-esteem, makes them feel angry and defensive, and causes them to dislike the source. So never complain about people or situations that you don't like. The most common word to describe the most popular people in every field is the word nice. When you think of a business that you like to patronize or a restaurant you like to visit, you always think of the people there as being nice. Whenever you recommend or refer someone to someone else, you always mention that he or she is a nice person. In sales and business, the nice people are always the most successful. People like to buy from them, buy again, and then recommend them to their friends. People enjoy seeing nice people and they look forward to seeing them again. When asked what they mean by the word nice, people say that he or she is cheerful. The more positive you are, the more cheerful you are likely to be. The more cheerful you are, the nicer personality you will have. The nicer personality you have, the more people will look forward to seeing you and being around you. Number 7. Be courteous, concerned, and considerate of everyone you meet. Think of these as the 3 C's. Courtesy, concern, and consideration, and practice them with everyone you meet. When you treat a person with courtesy and respect, he or she feels more valuable and important. As a result of making a person feel more valuable and respected, that person will in turn value and respect you even more as well. When you express concern about things that are happening in a person's life, they warm up to you and like you more. When a person has a difficult situation and you express your concern or compassion, you touch their heart. You connect with their emotions. Through this, you make yourself a more likable person. Consideration is the 3rd of the 3 C's. When you practice consideration, you discipline yourself to do and say things to people that make them feel more valuable and important. Be concerned about other people. When you meet a person for the first time, or again after a period of time, ask them how they are, and then listen closely to the answers. People will often share with you a concern or problem in their lives. When they do, practice consideration and sensitivity. Treat the problem or difficulty as though it were extremely important to you. Amazingly enough, when you act as if you are really interested and concerned with a problem or situation in another person's life, you very soon start to feel genuinely affected emotionally by the other person. The rule for building lifelong friendships and wonderful relationships is simple. Resolve that from now on, when people leave your presence, they will feel much better than they did when they entered your presence. Practice all the ideas above to make people feel important. Look for ways to raise people's self-esteem and reinforce their self-image. Make them feel as though they are valuable and worthwhile. Furthermore, everything that you do or say to make another person feel important makes you feel important as well. Now here are 7 action exercises. 1. Make a list of the most important friends in your work and personal life. What could you do to make them feel better about themselves? Number 2, identify the first thing you could do in every meeting or encounter to make the other person feel important. Number 3, resolve to make each person feel more valuable and worthwhile because he or she spoke to you. Number 4, practice non-judgmentalism in all your relationships. Always assume the best of intentions on the part of others. Number 5, imagine that each person you meet has only a short time to live, and you are the only person who knows. Number 6, find something about each person that is impressive to you, and then tell the other person how impressed you are. And 7, imagine that there is a hidden camera and microphone recording every interaction you have with other people. How would you behave differently? Chapter 21, Self-Discipline and Peace of Mind. James Allen wrote, "Men are anxious to improve their circumstances, but are unwilling to improve themselves. They therefore remain bound. The man who does not shrink from self-crucifixion can never fail to accomplish the object upon which his heart is set. This is true of earthly as of heavenly things. Even the man whose object is to acquire wealth must be prepared to make great personal sacrifices before he can accomplish his objective. And how much more so he who would realize a strong and well-poised life. You require high levels of self-discipline if you truly desire to develop all your inner resources and fulfill your true potential. Throughout the ages, in all religions and philosophies, the highest human good or idea has been peace of mind. Your ability to achieve your own peace of mind is the true measure of your success and the key determinant of your happiness. To develop spiritually and to become a fully functioning person, you must regularly apply self-discipline and self-control to your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Spiritual development, inner peace, and the experience of joy all require self-mastery and self-control. To succeed in the outer world, you must discipline yourself to focus and concentrate, work hard at your job, take continuous action toward your goals, and become better and more capable as you move onward and upward in life. To succeed in the inner world, however, requires almost the opposite abilities. To achieve inner peace, you must discipline yourself to let go of everything that can disrupt your sense of inner peace and contentment. Zen Buddhism teaches that the main cause of human suffering and unhappiness is attachment. People become attached to ideas, opinions, and material things, and then they are reluctant to let go of them. Sometimes people become so preoccupied with these external factors that it affects their mental and physical health, even keeping them awake at night. When you practice detachment, separating yourself emotionally from things or outcomes, the negative emotions involved stop as well, like unplugging a light from the socket. The need to be right. Most people have a deep down need to be right. However, when you stop caring if you are right or wrong, all the emotions surrounding this need for rightness disappear. Dr. Gerald Jampolsky asked the great question, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Some people become passionate about their political or religious beliefs, all of which have been learned from someone else in some way. But when you put these beliefs aside for a while, they lose their ability to stir your emotions or inflame your anger. I have friends and meet people with ideas and opinions that range all over the political and religious spectrums. In most cases, we get along well together because we simply put aside the discussion of opinions on which we differ. We consciously and deliberately discipline ourselves to detach from these ideas, and we focus instead on subjects that we agree on and in which we share common interests. Refuse to blame anyone for anything. The chief cause of negative emotions and the primary destroyer of inner peace is blame. As I mentioned earlier in the book, it's not possible to have a negative emotion without having someone or something to blame in some way or for something. Blame requires one or both of two factors to exist. The first is identification. This occurs when you take something personally. You identify with it. As soon as you decide to feel that someone has done or said something negative that affects your personal interests in some way, you immediately become angry and blame that person. Even if someone who is hurrying to work, completely preoccupied, and who may have just had a fight with his or her spouse accidentally cuts you off in traffic, you can immediately become angry at that person, a complete stranger, because you took their driving behavior personally. But when you discipline yourself to detach and stop taking things personally, the negative emotional charge connected with the person or incident stops almost immediately. For example, when someone cuts you off in traffic, you can detach from the situation emotionally by saying to yourself, "Oh well, he's probably in a hurry to get to work. Maybe he's late." The minute you say that to yourself, all negativity associated with the event vanishes and you become calm, relaxed, and positive once more. The second root cause of blaming is justification. This occurs when you tell yourself and others why it is that you are entitled to be angry or upset in this situation. Many people fall in love with their suffering. Their past problems become a primary focus of their lives. They think about what happened all the time. They go through the day and even the night carrying on angry conversations with people who are not present, people who they feel have hurt them in the past. Whenever they get into a conversation for any period of time, they bring out their suffering, like a trader in a bazaar, and display it to the other person. They then recycle through the unhappy events of their lives, telling what happened and how they were badly treated and how awful the other person was to have behaved in this way. However, when you discipline yourself to stop justifying your negative emotions by continually rehashing what happened and what the other person did or didn't do, and when you instead calmly accept that stuff happens in life, your negativity accompanying the other person or situation dies away. Practice forgiveness. The height of self-discipline in spiritual development is the practice of forgiveness. The law of forgiveness says you are mentally and emotionally healthy to the degree to which you can freely forgive anyone who has hurt you in any way. Every person, including you, has experienced destructive criticism, negative treatment, unkindness, rudeness, unfairness, betrayal, and dishonesty from others over the years. These events are unfortunate, but they are an inevitable and unavoidable part of being a member of the human race. The only way you can avoid the problems and difficulties of living in a busy society with many different kinds of people is to live in a cave. The only question you need to ask and answer after you've had a negative experience is, how long does it take you to get over this event and get on with your life? This is a decision only you can make. It is one of the most important types of decisions that you make in your own life if you truly want to be happy. What's more, it is a true test of your mental and spiritual discipline. The forgetting curve. Each person has a forgetting curve, or what is often called a forgiveness curve. This curve measures how quickly you forgive and forget a negative experience, and it determines how mentally and emotionally healthy you really are. Imagine a rectangle with a scale from 0 to 100 ascending the left side of the rectangle. This is the scale of the intensity of the negative emotion you experience when you are hurt or offended in some way. Across the bottom of this graph are the months and years of your life. You can have either a flat forgiveness curve or a steep downward sloping forgiveness curve. If your forgiveness curve is flat, this means that you continue to be angry at the same level as when the event occurred for a long time, sometimes for years or even decades. There are countless people who are still angry about something one of their parents did or said to them decades ago. Furthermore, they will tell you about it at the drop of a hat. They will reach into their gunny sack of unforgiven events and pull out their childhood experiences and share them with you. Every psychologist and psychiatrist who deals with unhappy people is employed because their patients have flat forgiveness curves. Their primary conversation in therapy is talking about what someone did or didn't do to them or for them at some point in the past and how unhappy that person still feels about it today. Get over it and get on with it. Truly healthy people, on the other hand, have downward sloping forgiveness curves. They have had just as many difficulties and problems in life as anyone else, but they have disciplined themselves by resolving to forgive and forget quickly so that they can get on with their lives. They refuse to gunny-sack their problems and carry them forward. They simply let them go and turn their attention to the things that make them happy. The discipline of forgiveness is the key to the spiritual kingdom. It is only possible for you to enjoy high levels of peace of mind when you develop the habit and discipline of freely forgiving other people for everything and anything that they have done to hurt you. Forgiveness is selfish. Some people are confused about the concept of forgiveness. They think that forgiving someone else for having hurt them is the same as condoning that behavior or even approving of it. Quite the contrary. Forgiveness is a purely selfish act. Forgiveness has nothing whatever to do with the other person. You forgive others so that you yourself can be emotionally free, so that you no longer carry that baggage around with you. You have a wonderful mind. You are incredibly intelligent and insightful. You can use your mind on your behalf in order to help you to be joyous and happy, or you can use it against yourself. The way you use your mind at the highest level is to find reasons to forgive others. Instead of rehashing and dissecting a past event, looking for rationalizations, justifications, and reasons to take something personally, instead, use your intelligence to find reasons to accept responsibility and then let go of the negative situation. Accept responsibility and forgive. The instant you accept responsibility and forgive everyone for anything that they ever did to hurt you in any way, you liberate yourself completely. All your negative emotions disappear. In place of your negative emotions, you experience a sense of inner peace, love, happiness, and joy. The payoff for using your self-discipline to practice forgiveness on an ongoing basis is extraordinary. When you use your incredible abilities of self-control, self-mastery, and detachment to separate yourself emotionally from situations that would otherwise make you unhappy, the entire quality of your life improves in a wonderful way. Now here are 7 action exercises. Number 1, take the forgiveness test. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? 2, identify the people from your past who you feel have hurt you in any way and then make a decision today to forgive them and let go of those negative feelings. 3, find reasons not to justify your negative emotions of blame or anger and instead use your intelligence to accept responsibility. 4. Set peace of mind as your highest goal, and then resolve to let go of any thoughts or emotions that disturb you in any way. 5. Begin today to read something spiritual and uplifting each morning before you begin your day. This habit will change your life. 6. From now on, refuse to take things personally. Ask yourself how much it will matter 5 years from today. And number 7, practice the Buddhist method of detachment from money and material things and refuse to become upset or worried about anything. This is Brian Tracy, and thank you for listening.
This has been a Gildan Audio production.
This audio program is presented by Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.